Unit 8. Acquisition Accounting.
Text 8.2. Honeymoon accounting offers financial advantages. The launch last week of TI Group's hostile bid for Darty, the aerospace company, raised familiar questions about how Mr. Christopher Lewington, the TI chairman, accounts for acquisitions in his rapidly growing engineering group. Although within accounting standards, TI's past treatment of acquisitions is almost certain to figure prominently in Darty's defense this month. The ensuing debate will again highlight current accounting rules, which grant acquiring companies a financial honeymoon during which to reorganize their prize, a luxury not available to the same degree to incumbent managements. Ironically, Mr. Michael Garner, TI's finance director, is a member of the Accounting Standards Board, which later this year will produce a draft standard covering the treatment of fair value adjustments on acquisitions. This well-established practice allows the cost of reorganizing an acquisition to be defrayed without impacting on profits. It has been widely criticized as a way in which ordinary operating costs can be lost, boosting reported profits and earnings. The acquisition accounting issue looms particularly large for TI. Its rapid transformation since 1986 from Tube Investments has involved a heavy acquisition program and an equally heavy use of fair value adjustments. Over the period, it spent about £500 million on acquisitions and another £100 million on reorganization. Almost all acquisitive companies make use of the practice. At its simplest, it allows an acquiring company to identify costs of reorganization, redundancies and plant closures, and to set up provisions in the balance sheet against which future costs can be charged. But in 1990, TI was widely criticized in the city for taking the practice to the limits of what was acceptable. Fair value provisions are usually set up soon after an acquisition and released over 18 months. In its 1989 accounts, TI made £92 million of fair value provisions, some £59 million of which related to additional goodwill write-offs relating to its 1988 acquisitions. The additional provision was more than half that year's pre-tax profits of £112 million. Critics said these costs, referred to as a major rationalization of manufacturing facilities, systems and organizational structures in the 1989 accounts, might have been better treated as exceptionals or operating costs in what was by then an ongoing business. Mr. Lewington and Mr. Garner insist there was nothing wrong with this treatment, and indeed, Price Waterhouse, TI's auditors, did not qualify the accounts. We had always had an agreement with our auditors that we would not rush to finalize provisions in one balance sheet, said Mr. Garner. The reasoning behind this second bite at the provisions had, however, been poorly communicated to the city. Some analysts have argued there is more to TI's second bite. First of all, TI had 11 months after the acquisition of Bundy in April 1988 before the auditors signed off the 1988 accounts, during which to identify potential write-offs. It also had an opportunity before the bid, which was agreed, and allowed TI to do full due diligence on Bundy. Mr. Garner said that the opportunity for further restructuring, and therefore additional provisions, only came to light once senior members of the Bundy board left nearly a year after the acquisition, and fresh ideas from more junior executives surfaced. The debate is not academic, as it has implications for TI's cash flow. TI's unbroken record of strongly positive funds generation since 1986 would be severely dented if some of its past provisions were treated as ongoing operating costs. In 1989, for instance, a tougher accounting treatment of the second Bundy provision would have meant TI's operations were actually a drain on funds.